Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
The 25th, and we are continuing in our redemption class. We're in Parshas Va'era. And last time we read, Va'era starts on 318, and we read all the way through on page 320 to the end of Pasuk Gimel, verse 13. But we did not have a chance to go in depth in all of those, so came all those verses. So we are going to start this evening with a review of the Arba Lashonos Shel Geula, the four words of redemption, which are introduced to us in Pasuk Vav, verse 6, on page 318. We spoke about these extensively last time. We're going to bring it up again because what we said, what we ended off with last time, is that we had to discuss the fifth word for Geula, for redemption, which is not generally spoken about because there really are only four, but there's a fifth. So let's look carefully again at these verses, starting with Pasuk Vav, verse 6. This is Hashem telling Moshe that he has remembered the covenant between himself and Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And we mentioned last time that when it comes to Hashem, since he never forgets, the word remember means he has decided to deal with the covenant. Not that he actually forgot about it, but now he's going to deal with it. So it says, Lachin, therefore, Amor li Bnei Yisrael ani Hashem. Say to the Bnei Yisrael, I am Hashem, using that name of Hashem. And now we begin with the four words of Geula. Vahotzei si eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim. I will take you out from under the bondage of Egypt, the burdens of Egypt. There's the first one, Vehotzei si. I will take you out. Vehitzalti eschem me'avodasam. I will save you from their work. That's the second one, Vehitzalti, I will save. Vega'alti eschem bizro anituya uvishvatim gedalim. And I will, last time we didn't like the word redeem. What was the word we said last time?
That's what we said, but we didn't have
a... We didn't have a good word. Okay. Okay. Because there's no exchange over here. But I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments, meaning great judgments against Egypt. So that's the third one, Vigo'alti, I will redeem. And then the fourth one, V'lakachti eschem li la'am, and I will take you for me as a nation. That's the fourth one, V'lakachti, I will take. I will take out, I will save, I will redeem, and I will take. And let's read the rest of the verse. Will be for you as a God, and you will know. Now pay close attention here. Ki ani Hashem, that I am God. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. Hamotzi eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim, who takes you out from under the burdens of Egypt.
Sounds like you already said it.
Okay, that was said already. Wasn't that the very first word of Geula, the very first word of redemption? If you go back to the beginning of Pasuk Vav, or the middle of Pasuk Vav, it says, the very first one is, Vahotzei si eschem mitachas sivlos Mitzrayim. I will take you out from under the burdens of Egypt. And after the other three are introduced, then it says, and you will know that I am Hashem your God, who takes you out from under the burdens of Egypt.
But that's a different tense. Takes you.
Correct. That's correct. But it's funny that I agree with you. It's not that I will do it, but you will know that I am the God that does this. But if you just introduced four different things that you're going to do, then you should say, and you will know that I am God who does A, B, C, and D. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it says. It says over here, I will do A, I will do B, I will do C, and I will do D, and you will know that I am God who does A. Mm-hmm. What about B, C, and D?
Mm-hmm. Right. The first.
It's true, it's the first one.
I mean, it covers the other.
Does it cover the others? Aren't they in ascending order?
Well,
I would have thought
your people, yeah. But first you have to be
true.
out of there before you can't be his people in slavery.
That's true. But then when it's all over, if someone says to you, I am going to give you a job. An employer says to you, I'm going to give you a job. I'm going to hire you, number one. And number two, I'm going to give you a nice salary. Number three, I'm going to give you great benefits. And number four, I'm going to give you a promotion. And you will know that I gave you a job. Well, you also know that I gave you a great salary, benefits, and a promotion. So just because I gave you a job doesn't mean I gave you the other three. The last one really should include, I can't give you a promotion unless I already gave you a job. So the promotion includes the rest.
So maybe it's not referring to the other things also. Maybe he's talking about all the time in general. He's going to take us out from our problems.
Okay.
Well, that's
okay, that's what you're suggesting?
Talk about it all the time. I mean, every day.
Okay, so to say that is not a crazy thing to say. That makes sense. But then we would have to use the phrase, you will know that Hashem, your God, who takes you out from under the burdens of Egypt, as only being an example. I'm the God who takes you out of burdens. The burdens of Egypt is the example that you're most familiar with because it just happened. But there will be other ones as well. That's what we'd have to say. Okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe the first time Hashem mentions something about Tom, he's taking out of slavery, the servitude to Pharaoh. The lessons here, Hashem is taking them upon the yoke of Shaman, that he will be the king. It's a, they're going to be taken upon themselves a different type of burden. He's going to take a burden that will not distract them from the ability to serve Hashem as a supreme being.
So the first one, when he takes them out from the burden,
Mitzrayim, which says, I'm going to take out from Pharaoh, from Mitzrayim, from the burdens, from the servitude, because they were slaves to Mitzrayim, slaves to Pharaoh. Then Hashem, when he repeats himself, he's saying, but I will take you out to be a people for me, but I will remove any other burden.
Okay. Okay. So Mrs. Wittenberg is wants to get the literal sense over here. What Mrs. Starkman is saying is similar to what was said before, which is that it doesn't mean specifically the burdens of Egypt. It means that I am Hashem, your God. I'm going to take you as a people. I'm going to be your God, and I will remove all other distractions from you, similar to the burdens of Egypt. Okay, but there's got to be a meaning that takes the words at face value, at least that we don't have to twist it that much. So we'll work on it. What we're saying right now is valid, but we'll see if we can come up with something that might be more specific to the words themselves. Yeah.
Maybe it has to do with the fact that he's just telling Moshe now to deliver this message to Bnei Israel, and Moshe is going to give them this long string of things. The first one of which will make a lot of sense to them because they're groaning under these burdens. The rest of it is all going to seem pie in the sky. And when he wraps the whole thing up, maybe the point is that he's asking Bnei Israel to just think of him as the God who's going to do this first thing for them. Because if
okay.
You get back to the Hashemita, to the shortness of breath, you know, they may not be able to even think beyond the immediate future.
Okay.
If he sums up the whole thing and says, and then the people of Israel know that I took you to me as a people, they may just not have much reality for them because they can't think beyond their burdens.
Okay, so you're suggesting that the summing up of the whole thing, which is what Hashem wants the Jews to think about, they're not capable of thinking beyond the immediate problem. The immediate problem is so large that they can't think of the rest. A similar Chazal, our sages, do say something similar to this, that later on when we find that Moshe has to almost beg the people to take the possessions of the Egyptians on their way out. He has to tell them that everybody's got to find out from the Egyptians where their money is and then take it during the plague, and then when they're ready to leave, take it. So the Gemara says that why does he have to beg them to? I mean, isn't that a great thing to be able to walk away with? The Egyptians owed us the money because they had oppressed us for so long. So then, why do they have to be asked to do it? So the Gemara says, because if you have a person who is a slave, who's in jail, who's in terrible conditions, and you say, I'll take you out tomorrow and I'll give you a lot of wealth, his response is, take me out today and forget the wealth. And just get me out of here. He can't think about what happens after he's out. He just wants to get out. After he gets out and he's stuck without a job, without any source of income, and he says, oh, I should have taken the money. But at that moment, all you can think about is the immediate problem. So So it could be, you're right, that the reason why Hashem sums up with only the one, only the first thing, is because that was the immediate problem. And if that can be alleviated, that the Jews can wrap their minds around. But that you're going to take us out, and you're going to sit, and there's going to be this great judgment, and then we're going to be your nation out of it. That's just, it's too much to think about. Okay. Yeah.
I guess it's because it was impossible to leave Egypt. So for Hashem to take the Jews out of Egypt, that's the emphasis, is just to get out of Egypt, to remove the burden of Egypt.
That was the biggest.
It was a miracle.
Right, so it was miraculous
right,
in and of itself.
Miraculous in itself.
Okay. So you remember that. So that
what the emphasis is on that.
Okay. Claire?
I was just thinking Egypt that you know, what he was saying, and it sounds in a way like a marriage proposal.
Yeah, when he says at the end, I will take you.
This is, you know, I'm taking you for me. That's what you say when you get married, right?
Good, excellent.
I'm taking you for me. Mm-hmm.
This
Moshe seems like he. That's kind of allegorical.
Well, there's no question, as we know from Shir HaShirim, from Song of Songs, that the relationship between us and Hashem is one of a man and a woman and a marriage
right.
relationship. There's no question about it. And the various stages in our courtship with Hashem are the exodus from Egypt, the plagues, the splitting of the sea, the getting of the Torah. All of this is part of the process. There's no question about it.
My question is, did it have to get so bad for us to actually accept the gem as our husband? You know, we had to like suffer so much, you know, before she came. All right, we'll marry you. All right.
Right. Okay. Okay, so hold this thought. We're going to come back to this question and suggest something else in dealing with why Hashem emphasizes this first one as the thing to remember in the end, that Hashem takes us out from under the burdens of Egypt. Then we're followed with a fifth language, a fifth word for Geula, for redemption, which is not traditionally counted amongst the four. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Vehevei si eschem el ha'aretz. And I will bring you to the land Asher Nasasi Es Yadi, that I lifted my hand, which means I took an oath. Laseis Osa LeAbraham LeYitzchak LeYaakov, to give it to Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. V'Nasati Osa Lachem, and I will give it to you Morasha as an inheritance. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Vayidaber Moshe Kino Bnei Yisrael. Moshe said so to the Bnei Yisrael. V'lo Shamuel Moshe, they were not able to listen to Moshe. Mikotzer ruach, from shortness of breath, umeavodah kasha, from the heavy burden, the heavy work, they simply couldn't think about it. If they were unable to listen to Moshe, why does Hashem tell Moshe to tell the Jewish people? When we have something we want to tell somebody, and we call them or we say to them, you know, someone want to tell you, and the person says, I am so overwhelmed and I can't listen. I can't even begin, right? So, okay, so we back down and we say, okay, well, I'll talk to you another time. The only reason why we approached them in the first place is because we didn't know how overwhelmed they were. If we would have known at the outset how overwhelmed they were, we would have waited for a better time to speak to them. We wouldn't have gone in and wasted our time and our breath and had such a difficult conversation with them. Hashem knows how the Jews are feeling. Hashem is fully aware of this before he orders Moshe to tell the Jewish people. So why would Hashem tell Moshe to go to the Jewish people when Hashem knows that they're not going to be able to listen to him because of the work and the shortness of breath?
You know, I'm thinking of Netanyahu's speech. No, you know, he needed to give it. Nobody's listening to it, but it needed to be done.
Why?
This is what I think of as planting seeds. It has to be put out there. Somebody's going to hear it.
Okay, so what you're saying is that even though it doesn't have any immediate repercussion, right, because no one's able to listen now, mm-hmm, but there is something that is accomplished.
Right.
That's the question over here. What is exactly accomplished? So you're suggesting the accomplishment is that you plant the seed. Even if a person is too overburdened and too overwhelmed to listen, but they are listening, there's something that's seeping in.
Right.
And at a later moment, when they actually are able to breathe, it will come back to them.
Right.
That's what you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
I just realized, you know, from the question that I asked before, you know, why, you know, I think, like, we, the Jewish people, want to be, like, on some level, like everyone else. you know, we even though we have the neshama, it's hard to be this, you know, we want to be more physical, more, it's hard to be a Jew. So I think that's where the struggle is. Cause
not here, though. Not this.
Well, I mean, in general, for generations.
Okay.
For generations. It's
Well, now there's a whole rapport already starting between Hashem and Moshe. Mm-hmm. It's like getting the ball rolling.
Okay.
The plan. Do you want to jump in?
Herman, what's the thing?
In my opinion, Hashem is saying that life is not that simple. By giving the Jews or seeing that initially to obtain a goal, you have to pay a price. And if he said that, you know, just snapped her fingers or whatever, and it occurred, you wouldn't really appreciate what you have.
So there's got to be some effort that you put in.
Yes.
And how is that being brought out over here?
I think it's being brought out by basically the people themselves were, were leery.
So you're saying that the fact that they were overburdened and overworked,
yeah.
That was to bring out the point that this work and burden that you're going through is what's going to produce the ultimate goal.
Right.
Okay, because you got to put in some effort. This is the pain that has the gain.
Maybe also just introduce Hashem wants Moshe introduce him to Klal Yisrael. You have to remember they were in a land that was full of paganism, idolatry, and so you know the 49th level of Toma. So Hashem is sending him. Hashem knew they weren't going to listen because backbreaking work, as it says in the Haggadah. Who would think about anything spiritual? I think he's sending Moshe just to say, tell them I'm Hashem.
Okay. So just, again, get it out there. Get it on the table.
It's like if you have children, and if you keep just giving, they don't really appreciate what you're doing.
That's right.
You have to pay a price.
Right. That's right.
I think to build on what Doreen is saying, he puts it out there, and this is not just for Bnei Israel at this time in Mitzrayim. This is an eternal communication to the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
So Hashem also knows that we're going to be reading this constantly.
Today. Right.
And this is our guide.
Right.
So if Hashem can say this when we're mired in Mitzrayim, then he can say it to us today.
Okay, so the message then would not
message
necessarily, right? At that moment in time when Hashem said it, told Moshe to tell them, the accomplishment was minimal because they really couldn't hear it. But since it echoes to us through the generations, and we read it today, there it does have a significant impact.
And we're always mired in this time.
Yeah, in some way or other.
We're always mired.
Right.
So
we're mired
today in this time. So when we tell ourselves, you know, that we can't believe that Hashem is going to save us, we read this and we see that even in Mitzrayim he was saying he was going to save us, and he actually did.
Very good.
It's a resounding message.
Time and time again.
I mean, this is what we count on.
Right before this, Moshe was complaining to Hashem, why have you done all this evil? Why have you sent me? So maybe Hashem told Moshe to say this to Jewish people, partly so Moshe.
Okay, very good. Maybe it wasn't for the Jews at all.
Right,
it was for Moshe. That Moshe needed to say it. Because Moshe is the one who complained and said, it looks like Hashem, you're not doing anything. So he sends Moshe to say to the Jewish people, Hashem's going to save you. Not for the Jewish people to hear it, but for Moshe himself to say it.
Right.
Okay. Let's read on just slightly, a little bit more, and then we're going to come back to these points. Pasuk Yod, verse 10. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe, Lema Hashem says to Moshe, saying, Bo daber al paro melech Mitzrayim, come and speak to Paro, the king of Egypt, Bishalach es bnei Yisrael me'artzo, and he will send the Jewish people from his land. Vayidaber Moshe lifnei Hashem leimor. Moshe says in front of Moshe, in front of Hashem, saying, "Hein b'nei Yisrael lo shemu elai. Behold, the Jewish people haven't listened to me. Ve'eich yishma'ini faro. And how will Paro listen to me? Vani aral sfasayim. I am." How do they translate it here?
Sealed lips,
which means I have a speech impediment. So the Gemara tells us this is one of the kal vachomers that you find in the Torah. Kal vachomer is a method that is used to expound the Torah, usually in a halachic sense. But the classic way a kal vachomer works is that you take one thing. I mean, it's a simple logical exercise. You take one thing that happened, and you say, well, if this didn't work, then certainly the more difficult thing is not going to work. Or, if this worked, then certainly the easier thing is going to work. It's a logical progression, which we use that sort of logic all the time in our daily conversations and our daily thought process. And here, this is one of the ones that is expressed in the Torah. You find it a few times. You find a kal vachomer expressed in the Torah, and this is one of them that Moshe says, a very logical argument. If the Jews didn't listen to me. Now, what about the Jews? If the Jews, who are my people, who believe in you, Hashem, who want to get out of Egypt, and they didn't listen to me, so the Egyptians, who are not my people, who don't believe in you, who don't want the Jews to leave Egypt, Paro, he's going to listen to you? Why would, if the Jews didn't, why would Paro? That's what Moshe says. To which, and more than that, I have a speech impediment. So even if I didn't have a speech impediment, how would he listen? The Jews didn't listen, why would he listen? And on top of that, I have this speech problem. So finally, Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe ve'el Aharon. So Hashem speaks to Moshe and to Aharon, which is a response to Moshe's complaint, because now he's throwing in Aharon. Aharon is going to be the one who will, as we'll see later on, will be the one to make Moshe's words heard. Since Moshe has a speech impediment, Aharon does not. So Aaron will be the one to actually articulate the words. Vayetzavema b'nei Yisrael, and he commanded them to the b'nei Yisrael, v'al Paro melech Mitzrayim, and to Paro the king of Egypt, lehutzi es b'nei Yisrael me'aretz Mitzrayim, to take the Jews out of Egypt. Now, apparently, Pasuk Yud Gimel verse 13 is a response to Moshe's point in Pasuk Yud Beis, in verse 12. There is a conversation going on here, a give and take. Hashem says to Moshe, go tell Paro to let my people go. Moshe says, hey, Hashem, one second. You know, the Jews didn't listen. Why would Paro listen? And I have a speech impediment. So he made two strong points. First of all, the Jews didn't listen, so why should Paro listen? And second of all, I have a speech problem. So why would Paro listen anyway?
But Paro didn't listen the first time either when he went the first time.
Okay, he didn't say that. Moshe didn't say that this time.
I know, but okay. He already has a precedent.
Okay, that's a good point. It's interesting Moshe didn't bring it up again.
He did.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. But Moshe, so now Hashem is going to respond to Moshe's two problems. A, the Jews didn't listen, why would Paro? And B, I have a speech impediment. So, he speaks to Moshe and to Aaron. Okay, right there he got rid of the speech impediment. Yeah, you have a speech impediment, I'll give you, your brother will help you out. Fine. Great. Where does he deal with the first problem? What did he say to Moshe and to Aaron? He commanded them concerning the Jews and concerning Paro, the king of Egypt, to take Bnei Yisrael out of Egypt. Well, first of all, we don't get much information over there. He commanded them about the Jews and about Paro to take the Jews out of Egypt. What about the Jews? What about Paro? Whatever the about is, apparently is going to be addressing Moshe's other complaint. Now let's follow carefully. He sends Moshe to speak to the Jewish people. Hashem knows the Jews aren't going to be able to listen, but he sends Moshe anyway to the Jewish people. Moshe goes, and he speaks to them, and they don't listen. Okay? Then he sends them to Paro. Moshe says, the Jews didn't listen. Why would Paro listen? And I can't speak well. It seems from the progression that Hashem was setting Moshe up. Isn't he setting him up? He sends him to the Jewish people knowing the Jewish people aren't going to listen. They don't listen. Then he sends him to Paro and he says, the Jews didn't listen. Why would Paro listen? If Hashem would have skipped the Jews part, Moshe never would have had that complaint that the Jews didn't listen. Why would Paro listen? If Moshe wouldn't have gone to the Jews and been rejected, he wouldn't have had the point to make to Hashem. Well, I mean, but they didn't listen to him. It never would have happened. He would have set up, maybe he would have set up his speech impediment, but he never would have had the other point. Hashem seems to have deliberately set things up so that Moshe will say to Hashem, but the Jews didn't listen, why would Paro listen? He really set the stage here for a rejoinder from Moshe to that would suggest he should not go to Paro. And that then Hashem addresses it. It seems that Hashem wanted to address it. So he set Moshe things in motion for Moshe that he would bring up this point comparing Paro to the Jewish people, and now Hashem will address it directly. How does he address it directly? He commands them about the Jews and about Paro. So what about the Jews and about Paro? So Rashi says over here in the name of Chazal that he commanded Moshe and Aaron concerning the Jews and concerning Paro. That what? Number one, concerning the Jews. You're going to be leading the Jewish people. As a leader of the Jewish people, you have to deal with them no matter where they're at, no matter what they're doing, no matter if they can't listen to you, you still need to deal with them. You cannot reject them. You can't allow yourself to feel rejected by them. And you cannot shirk your responsibility as leader, even if they seem to be completely out of touch with you and with what's going on. Even so, let me read you the language. As Rashi says, Sivam Alehem, he commanded them, meaning Moshe and Aaron, Alehem, about them, about the Jewish people, Lehanhigam Binachas, to lead them pleasantly, to lead them in a pleasant manner, Velisbol Osam, and to tolerate them. He was giving Moshe and Aaron, especially Moshe, a very graphic, first-hand appreciation for what it means to be a leader when the people aren't interested in being led. They were just overburdened. They couldn't take it. They were overburdened. They couldn't hear him. Moshe, I can't, right? Even so, you're the leader. You got to shepherd my people. It doesn't matter where they're at. And what about Paro? Sivam Alav, he commanded them, Moshe and Aaron, Alav, about him, about Paro, Lach Lok Lo Kavod B'divrehem, to speak with him with kavod, with honor, in the way they talk. To always speak in a refined manner, giving him the deference of being the king. Even though he's evil, even though he's mistreating the Jewish people, even though he deserves to be punished and will be punished, but that doesn't give you license to talk down to him. It doesn't give you license to ignore his position. He's still the king. And as king, you're expected to speak to him properly. So Hashem told Moshe and Aaron that when you're going to be leading over here, I'm going to give you some ground rules that you wouldn't have thought of on your own. One is, you've got to lead the Jewish people pleasantly no matter where they are, even if they can't listen to you. Number two, when dealing with Paro, as much as he is a no good for nothing, as much as he deserves to be punched many times over, still you've got to speak with respect. You don't talk in an unrefined manner to a king. You shouldn't talk in an unrefined manner to anybody, but certainly not to a king. You got to respect the position. It seems almost that Hashem, I can't say this is for sure the entire reason of what's going on over here, and I appreciate what everybody else said. I'm not discounting what was said before, but it seems from the way you read it that Hashem wanted to bring this lesson out. So he wanted Moshe to feel a certain degree of frustration with the Jewish people and then superimpose that on Paro. So then Hashem can lay the ground rules. That's what it seems to me is going on in addition to what was said before.
Well, clearly he's teaching him leadership skills, because you see later on when they saw Vegel Hazahav and he beseeches the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and he had the 13 years of Rachamim, He really has refined those skills.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, Moshe becomes the greatest leader we ever had.
Right.
There's no question about it. But here, it's in his leadership is in its fledgling stages.
Right.
And there's no right. Which means we're getting a glimpse into that. It's, when we are all involved in different things that need require leadership, we have to turn to where the instruction prior to do so is given to us. Yeah.
So you're saying this was a plan, not a test.
Correct. We don't find that Moshe is blamed over here. He was taken to task for going back and complaining to Hashem before.
Right.
That was at the end of Shmos, for saying, oh, you sent me the power, it only got worse. There he was taken to task for that. Here he is not blamed. No, we never find that that Hashem admonished him for this.
Okay.
Only that it seems that Hashem wanted to bring out the lesson, so he set up the case.
What does it mean,
the Lisibol, son? Lisibol.
Lisibol?
Means to... Well, I translated it as to tolerate. Lisbol means to carry a burden.
Right. Mm-hmm. The same language in the Chumash.
To be sovel, right?
I think who's
first? Go ahead.
I think it's important that the verb that's used for Hashem in communicating with Moshe is Daber at the beginning, and then it's Daber again, and Moshe is arguing with him, and then we get to this third thing, and we change the Tzavim, which I think takes it out of the realm of logic and establishes the fact that this is no longer a conversation, and it's not about logic, because there is no logical way that Bnei Israel is ever going to get out of Mitzrayim, and it's not something that really can be discussed. And that's really, in my eyes, one of the aspects of Hashem's rejoinder to Moshe.
Okay, very good.
I heard you, but at this point, I'm commanding, and it's my will. And really,
okay.
Everything that happens from here on is simply Hashem's will.
Right.
There is no logic to it. It doesn't
okay.
matter. You know, the rest of Moshe's logical arguments, the Kal Vahomer doesn't matter, his speech impediment doesn't matter. It's Hashem's will, it's going to get carried out. And
okay.
So you're
drawing attention to Dibor versus Tzivui.
Right.
Dibor is to talk, and that connotes a conversation. That's what you're pointing out. It connotes a give and take. It means there's what to discuss.
When he commands,
once you get commanded, just do it. There's nothing to talk about. Right? You can't question a command. Once you get the command from your superior, you do it. And that's that. Very good. So that's to bring out the point that it's no longer logical. And as you are, which you are suggesting, which is true, that from here on in, with just a short interruption giving us the lineage of Moshe and Aaron, we are going to hit the plagues. And the plagues, once you hit the plagues, you're not dealing with logic anymore. It's all supernatural. It's all totally in the realm of Hashem. It's a personal thing between Hashem and Paro, and Hashem is going to make Paro understand one way or another.
It just brought us back to the burning bush when Hashem was talking to Moshe, and Moshe had the exact same reaction. They won't listen to me, and I have a speech impediment. So this is recurring.
That's right. That was his original reason for not wanting to be the leader. Very good.
I didn't know.
Right, okay. Yeah.
But it keeps repeating.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I didn't mention that. To me, it seems that it sounded to me like Hashem is saying, "Look, Abraham, Isaac, and Moshe. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, listen to me. I said, do this, go here, do this, go away from your land, you know, bring your son to the mountain, you know." Abraham didn't say, well, wait a minute, you know, this is my only son, this is, he didn't present a reason. Hashem said it. They did it. So, Moshe, right here, Hashem was saying, they didn't say anything. Let's, you know, you got to come up to par. And when I say, this is what we're doing, you need to do it.
Okay, very good. Very good.
like Abraham and Yitzhak and Yaakov didn't have a whole B'nai Yisrael.
That's correct.
To deal with.
That's correct.
And it was just
that's correct.
Himself. And another thing about the speech, Moshe had already lived with Paro in the palace. It's not like Paro couldn't understand him all of a sudden, like he's first meeting him for the first time. Why all of a sudden is this such a big problem? Because he lived there until he was an adult.
Because it's Paro's fault.
But why is he saying that he's not going to understand me all of a sudden when he understood him all those years?
I suspect you're bringing up a good point. As you're saying that the Paro could understand him, he understood him before, can understand him now. I suspect that it's one of those things. You know, sometimes.
Excuse.
If you're in a foreign country and you're speaking to someone who is able to speak English. And you know, they'll talk to you, and then if the conversation turns in a way the person doesn't want to be talking to you, all of a sudden they don't speak English anymore.
Right.
Right? You've had that experience? It's a convenient way of getting out of the conversation.
Is it possible that this is a different part? I mean, there's never any reference anymore to the fact that Moshe was raised.
It's always possible that it's another paro. You never know for sure that it's another paro. But here it's right. It is possible. It is possible. It would seem it's the same one, but it is possible.
You're talking about collective hearing.
Right. That's right.
The Moshe coming as a leader now.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah, but Mrs. Leitch is saying that paro definitely understood Moshe, meaning he knew how to follow his.
They spoke with each other before.
Yeah. Now, going back to the question I brought up before about that Hashem says that tell the Jewish people that I'm going to do these four things. I'm going to take you out from the burdens, save you from slavery, redeem you with an outstretched arm and with big, great judgments, and I'm going to take you as a nation. And then you will know that I took you out from under the burdens. So we pointed out that it doesn't seem like he's talking about all of the things. What happened to the other three things? So, I'm just trying to remember which commentary was it I read this in. I want to say it was the Aruch Chaim, writes, I liked it very much when I read it. He writes that there is, as we pointed out, a fifth word for redemption. And that is, in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, I will take you to the land. So he writes as follows. Notice that when Hashem introduced the first four words, they were unconditional. He just said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take you out of the burdens. I'm going to save you from the work. I'm going to redeem you with great wonders. And I'm going to take you as a nation. There were no conditions attached to those four. Now, as Herman said, it is true, the Jews really already paid their dues. They went through all the slavery. But from this point on, there is no condition. But he writes, for the fifth word, Vehevesi Eschem El Ha'aretz, I'll bring you to the land, that has a condition attached to it. The condition is what it says right before that. And you will know that I am Hashem who took you out from under the burdens of Egypt. He writes that in order for the Jews to deserve to get the land of Israel, we must actively remember, that Hashem is the one who took us out of the burdens of Egypt. If we forget that Hashem took us out of the burdens of Egypt, then we are not fulfilling our condition in order to get the land. One is contingent on the other. Hashem does not require, according to this explanation, Hashem does not require that we remember, that we know the other three things. That He saved us from being slaves, that He had all these great judgments against the Egyptians, that He took us as His nation. Of course, it's good to know those things as well. But those aren't the condition. The condition is only the first one. The condition, in other words, only requires the most basic of the four. If we know the most basic of the four, which is that Hashem took us out of the burdens of Egypt, then we deserve to have the land. That's what he writes. Now, there's a difference between remembering and knowing. This is, and you will know, vidatem, and you will know. You will know means that it is something that you live with as a fact in your life. No one has to tell you that, no one has to, you don't have to be reminded constantly that you are a Jew. We all know that we're Jewish. We don't have to wake up in the morning and remind ourselves that we're Jewish. We don't have to wake up in the morning and remind ourselves of what our name is. Thank God we don't have that problem with what our name is, what our family members, who our family members are, what city we live in. There's some things we just know. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to actively think. It's just there. And everything we do in life, every decision that we make already factors in those things that we know. We know that when the sun comes up, it's daytime. When the sun goes down, it's nighttime. And we all of our thinking includes already that which we know. The condition to get the land is that we know that Hashem took us out from under the burdens of Egypt. What does it mean that we know it? What it means that we know it would be... that what?
It's inextricably connected to every cell of our body.
That's correct. But what do we know? We know that He took us out, which means that we know that we're only free because of Him. That we only are here to make choices and to live our lives as we please because of Him. That had He, as the Haggadah says, had He not taken us out, we would still be there. Our children would be there. Our children's children would be there. We would forever have been slaves in Egypt. So we know that our ability to have any kind of our own, of control of our own destiny, is because Hashem willed it. Because Hashem took us out of Egypt. And therefore, we shouldn't abuse that ability to shape our own destiny, because it came from Hashem. If we can live our lives with that knowledge, with every decision that we make based on that knowledge, then we deserve the land of Israel. That's what I believe it's the Aruch Chaim writes. Yeah.
It's also...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
She had her hand before.
Yeah, go ahead.
Looking at Rabbi Hirsch's commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Now he says that the Jewish people are human beings and not supernatural beings. And that Hashem does not give the honors unless you really deserve them.
Very good. So there has to be something that you've done to deserve what it is.
God does not assign such honor haphazardly instead of choosing His initially.
Very good. Very good. Very good.
I want to mention that this is very important Indian here that we're learning about. It's an Indian of Hakarat HaTov, because we're constantly reminded about this in the benching, in the Shemana Esrei, in the Shema. Everything is to remember, I took you out of Mitzrayim. I'm, you know, a nation to be my people. So it's an Indian of Hakarat HaTov Hashem is teaching us here.
Very good. Very good. To remember that He did it, so we have gratitude to Him.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Okay, so since we bring everything is for us now, so do we think Mitzrayim being, you know, any narrow?
You could do that. You could think that way, but I don't think that is the. We could certainly understand it that way, but I don't think it's necessary.
Just understand it the way it's written.
Right. I don't think you have to take it out of context.
Okay.
Now, let's look at the Haggadahs. Before you open it up, I'll give you a page number. But before we do that, we know that there are four cups of wine that we drink at the Seder. And the four cups correspond to these four words of Geula. When do we drink these four cups? Each one is associated with another part of the Haggadah. So So the first one is easy. The first one is Kiddush. Just like on any other Friday night, any other Yontif night, we make Kiddush. That's the first cup. That makes sense. The other three are not so simple. So the other three, each one is associated with another piece of the Haggadah. So the second cup,
Magid.
Okay, is when we finish Magid, when we finish telling the story of Mitzrayim, of getting out of Egypt, which precedes the meal. That's the whole, that's really the whole trick of the Seder. The whole trick of the Seder, the whole trick of the Manashtana is that we don't begin the meal. Normally, after Kiddush, you start the meal. That's what we do the whole year. But Pesach night, we make Kiddush, and instead of serving the meal, we push away the meal and we begin to talk about the about what happened in Egypt. Because we have to, we say to ourselves, tonight, the night of Pesach, there is a mitzvah to recount what happened, and for every generation to tell it over to the next generation and say it over, and therefore we're not going to begin eating until we have first fulfilled that obligation, which is Magid. That's telling it over. When we finish, we drink the second cup. After that comes all the things that everybody's been waiting for, because everybody's starving at that point. So then we wash and we have matzah and we have maror and we have korech and we have, then it all comes after that. But the second cup of wine is when we finish the part of the Haggadah of Magid, telling the story. So that's the first two cups. Kiddush, Kaddish, and Magid. The last two cups are after the meal.
After benching.
Right. Well, after the meal. So the third cup is actually not so unusual, although many people don't practice it today, but it's not such an unusual thing, which is that when we bench for the meal we just ate, we bench using a cup of wine, which you can do the whole year round, but you're not required to do the whole year round. But you can. You can, and frequently it is done at a simcha or something like that, certainly at a wedding, but even not a wedding, at a large gathering, it's frequently done that the person who benches uses a cup of wine. And that's when we drink the third cup. We bench, and after we finish benching, we make a bracha on the third cup and drink it. That's the third cup. What is the fourth cup recited about, or on, or attached to?
After
Hallel. Hallel. Mm-hmm. After benching is over, after we've said our bracha on the meal, then, this is already after the Afikoman, after benching, we had the third coast, the next thing is Hallel. Because it's a mitzvah on Seder night to say Hallel. It's the only time of the year where there's a mitzvah to say Hallel at night. Hallel is always said during the day, only during the day. But Pesach night is an exception, as you probably heard me talk about this before, and we'll talk about it again, I'm sure, that the night of Pesach is really a daytime halacha. And in halacha, as far as the Torah is concerned, we look at the night of Pesach as if it's a daytime. So we say Hallel on the night of Pesach. And the fourth cup of wine is attached to Hallel. Now the halacha is that once a person has had his four cups of wine, you're not allowed to drink any more wine. Because if we drink any more wine, what will it look like?
Sugar.
Looks like we're... sugar. Good. But it looks like we're adding on to the mitzvah. The mitzvah is four cups. Not three, not two, and not five, and not six. It's only four. And therefore, we're not allowed to start drinking more, even if we can tolerate it. We're not allowed to drink more afterwards, because it will appear like we're adding on to the zunt. And we can't do that. But, in the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama writes that if a person is very thirsty and would like to drink more, there is a method of having a fifth cup. There is a method of having a fifth cup. I have to tell you, I've never seen anyone do it, but it is an acceptable practice if a person would like to add in a fifth cup of wine. Where would that go? Where would it go?
In the meal, no?
No, during the meal you can drink whatever you want, because during the meal it doesn't look like you're adding on, because people drink during meals.
Oh, okay.
So that just looks like regular eating.
Yeah.
Right? You drink whatever you want. But when we finish the meal, and after benching, you only eat one more and that's it. There is a fifth cup. Now, what you're probably talking about is the cup of Eliyahu HaNavi, cup of Elijah, right?
Yeah.
So that cup is not drunk by the people. That's poor Feliel, and I'm glad you brought it up because I meant to mention it. That cup, interestingly, is called the cup of Eliyahu Hanavi, not because Eliyahu drinks from it, because he doesn't, even though we adults always shake the table so that the kids will think that he's drinking from it, but there is no such, it never says that Eliyahu drinks from it. Eliyahu does come to the Seder, that's true, but the purpose of the fifth cup the cup of Eliyahu Hanavi is to be the cup of Geula, the cup of redemption that we hope to drink speedily and in our days when Mashiach comes. Mashiach comes, we'll drink a lachaim. The fact that Mashiach is here, there'll be a cup of wine to drink for that. So as symbolically to show that we firmly believe that Mashiach will come, just as we were redeemed from Egypt, so we will redeem from the current exile, and Mashiach will come. We pour a fifth cup and we put it on the table, but we don't drink it. We put it on the table. We open the door not to let Eliyahu in the door, as I've mentioned to you before, because Eliyahu does not appear on Pesach night as a person in human form. He is in his angelic spiritual form, in which case he doesn't need a door. He comes whatever it is, and the reason why we open the door is because we show that we are not afraid to open the door, even though it's nighttime. We're not afraid to open the door because we trust in Hashem. The night of Pesach is a Leil Shimurim. It's a night of protection. And we're willing to open the door despite the fact that it's the nighttime, middle of the night, or whatever it is. Fine. Well, we don't drink that cup. But if a person wants to have five cups, there is a way to do it. And the way to do it is, I ask you now to open to... Let's open the page...
Tell me it's filling the Chafi Halayla.
Was that? No. Open to page 40, please.
Five minutes.
Okay, we can do it. We can do it. Page 40 and 41 is where Hallel begins. This is. You notice the picture of the glass of wine. That's because that was the third cup, and also the cup of Eliyahu is poured over there. That's why there's a picture of a nice little helpful illustration for us. Fine. And then one begins Hallel. Now, really, Hallel, the first two paragraphs of Hallel were recited already before the meal. That's the whole discussion, why Hallel is broken up as it is. But be that as it may, we then continue with the regular Hallel that is said the whole year, like on Sukkot we're going to say Hallel, and on Rosh Chodesh we say Hallel. So we continue with Hallel. And it continues on page 42, all the way down the page, and continues on to page 44 until the last paragraph on 44. The last paragraph on 44, which on the Hebrew side begins Hodu LaHashem Ki Tov, on the English side begins Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. That paragraph is no longer the regular Hallel. That begins a new set of verses that are quoted from Tehillim, from Psalms, just like all of Hallel is quoted from Tehillim, from Psalms, but it's not part of the regular Hallel. And we say those verses, it continues on to the next page, on page 46, and the next page, page 48, and at the very bottom of page 48, we finally finish the Hallel. But we've said a whole bunch of things that aren't included in the regular Hallel. Pages, bottom of 44, all of 46, and all of 48 until the bottom, are paragraphs that are added in special for Pesach night. They're not part of the regular Hallel. And immediately after that, at the top of page 50, is where we drink the fourth cup. So what it says in the Shulchan Aruch is that if a person wants to have five cups, what they should do is drink the fourth cup when finishing the standard Hallel. Drink the fourth cup when beginning these additional psukim. In other words, you're not going to change the four cups that are already there. And the fourth cup is drunk at the end of Hallel. We're not going to change that. But what's going to happen is that fourth cup is going to become the fifth cup. and we're going to insert another cup of wine between the third and fourth. And where are we going to insert it? On page 44, with those words, Hodu la Hashem ki tov ki lam chasdo, give thanks to the Lord for He is good, for His kindness is everlasting. When we begin that paragraph,
just before the Hodu,
I'm not sure, since I've never seen it done, I'm not sure if it's on the beginning of this paragraph or the end of this paragraph.
Okay.
But it's done in conjunction with this paragraph of Hodu la Hashem ki tov ki lam chasdo, which is not part of the regular Hallel, even though there is a verse like that in the regular Hallel as well. But this paragraph here is not part of the regular Hallel. That's where we will insert a fifth cup, which will of course then be the fourth cup, and the regular fourth cup will be the fifth cup. That's what's going to happen.
So what do we say for that? We just say we're going for a
cup? And drink it. That's it. And the Sfaradim probably won't make a bracha, because they don't make a bracha on every cup. Ashkenazim make a bracha on every cup. The Sfaradim only make on two of them. This paragraph of Hodu La Hashem Ki Tov Ki Lam Chasdo is called in the Gemara Hallel HaGadol.
Oh, wow.
The Great Hallel. You have the regular Hallel, and then you have Hallel HaGadol, the Great Hallel. That's this one paragraph of which you notice it's got the same refrain, Ki L'Olam Chasdo, for His kindness is everlasting. Ki L'Olam Chasdo, Ki L'Olam Chasdo, all the way down and onto the next page. I have 26 of them.
We only say
it in
Shabbos and Yom Tov.
We say it in Pesukei of Shabbos and Yom Tov, correct? Hallel HaGadol is, the Great Hallel is this paragraph. This is where that extra cup of wine would be inserted if we were to have a fifth cup of wine. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos that it is prohibited to say Hallel HaGadol every day. One should not recite Hallel HaGadol, the Great Hallel, every day. One should not do so. We don't have enough time to really develop that thought, but it is not something which you just say offhand. You just throw it, oh, let's just say Hallel HaGadol. No. It's done for a specific reason. The fact that we say it on Pesach night is not surprising. Pesach night, when we're going to thank Hashem, Dayenu, we thank Him for everything, of course Hallel HaGadol is very appropriate to say on Pesach night. But the fact that the fifth cup is associated with this Hallel HaGadol, it would seem then that this fifth word of Vehevesi Eschem, I will bring you to the land, must be associated with this paragraph of Hallel HaGadol, the Great Hallel. And if it is so, that getting the land is contingent on knowing that Hashem took us out of Egypt, what aspect of Hashem taking us out is necessary to get the land? It is recognizing, acknowledging, Ki le'olam chasdo, for His kindness is everlasting. Remembering all the things He's done for us, remembering the gratitude that we have towards Him for what He has done, Ki le'olam chasdo, ki le'olam chasdo, ki le'olam chasdo, ki le'olam chasdo. All of that is associated with the fifth cup and the fifth word of Geula, the fifth word of redemption, which is, I will bring you to the land, to Eretz Yisrael. That's what it would seem is the connection over here with the fifth cup and this ki le'olam chasdo. Again, I've never seen it done, but most of the people who I have come in contact with at different seders, at different sedarim, reacted like Herman did, which is that four cups is plenty.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Fifth cup, you might have to roll me off to bed, right? which is understandable. And a person should not become inebriated at the seder. But it is halakhically acceptable to insert a fifth cup, and this is where it would go. Okay, we will stop here. Our next class is October 30th will be our next class.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.